This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. A pair of town hall appearances on the same night and the same time to replace a canceled presidential debate. AP correspondent Tim McGuire with details.
President Trump was on NBC from Miami. Moderator Savannah Guthrie asking if he had a coronavirus test before his first debate against Democrat Joe Biden.
Did you take a test on the day of the debate? I guess it's the bottom line.
I probably did, and I took a test the day before and the day before.
Trump's positive test 2 days after that debate landed him in the hospital for 3 days. Biden, in Philadelphia for a town hall carried by ABC, says Trump has failed to lead from the start of the pandemic.
He missed enormous opportunities and kept saying things that weren't true. It's going to go away by Easter. Don't worry about it. It's going to all, when the summer comes, it's all going to go away like a miracle.
The two men are slated to be on stage at Belmont University in Nashville next Thursday for their final debate. I'm Tim McGuire.
U.S. Senate Republicans are powering Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett closer to confirmation. They pushed past Democratic objections on the Senate Judiciary Committee Thursday and set October 22nd for its vote to recommend Barrett's nomination to the full U.S. Senate.
The Senate Judiciary Committee says it will vote next week on recommending Barrett's nomination, clearing the way for a full Senate vote by month's end. Democrats cannot stop her, but mounted a final effort.
I move to indefinitely postpone the nomination of Amy Coney Barrett.
No, we're not.
You're just trying to ram through this justice.
This process is a caricature of illegitimacy.
Richard Blumenthal, Amy Klobuchar, and Patrick Leahy all call it a sham. Committee Chair Lindsey Graham heard the objections.
There is no way you'll ever convince me that Amy Coney Barrett is not qualified using any reasonable standards of qualification.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
This is VOA News. With both sides digging in their heels as another deadline passed, the European Union and Britain are demanding concessions from one another in talks on a basic trade deal that would soften the economic blow of the coronavirus pandemic for all. The EU leaders meeting in a summit on the day British Prime Minister Boris Johnson had set a potential cutoff point for the acrimonious negotiations, and in a joint statement, it was now up to the UK to make the necessary moves to make an agreement available. New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern on Friday urged voters to deliver her a strong mandate at this weekend's general election, promising to provide a swifter recovery from the coronavirus pandemic. Ardern's response to the crisis has left her well-placed for Saturday's votes, although recent polls have suggested her Labour Party may need support from the minor Greens Party to form government. Labour has a comfortable double-digit lead over the main opposition centre-right National Party, while support for the Greens has been steady. The polls also predict the demise of Nationalist New Zealand First Party, Labour's current coalition partner, led by Deputy Prime Minister Winston Peters. The defense minister for Mexican ex-president Enrique Peña Nieto, General Salvador Cienfuegos Zepeda, was detained at Los Angeles Airport on Thursday by the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. A DEA spokeswoman in a Los Angeles area said she had no further details about the nature of the warrants, the circumstances of the arrest, whether he was coming or going in the Los Angeles airport, or anybody about the family. Multiple members of Peña Nieto's cabinet and party have been implicated in high-level corruption cases, sometimes involving allegations of links to organized crime. Even months after screens went dark, cinemas have reopened in much of India with older titles on the marquee. Thursday's return to movie theaters is a sign of the country's efforts to return to normal as the pace of coronavirus infection slows, but also roadblocks that remain. India has recorded more than 110,000 virus deaths and is still registering the highest number of daily global cases. But trends also suggest the spread is beginning to slow. Nearly 10,000 theaters closed in March. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
We'll be right back. Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bhatia in Washington. Today is Friday, October 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Campaigning for Ivory Coast October 31st election has begun, but the opposition vows to disrupt it.
We are calling our members and the population to oppose any action which will be undertaken by the government concerning the election. We must impeach this ballot.
Guinea authorities confiscated travel documents of an opposition leader. Zimbabwe doctors and nurses say they are being prevented from leaving the country. Anger is rising as desperate needs of Sudan flood victims go unmet. And another presidential candidate is suspended from the campaign trail in Tanzania.
The reason they gave is that our candidate, Maalim Seif Sharif Hamad, has been mobilizing people to go and vote on the 27th of October, which is the day they've allocated for specific groups of people, which we know actually it is all aimed at rigging this election.
And the Shona community in Kenya protest once again for citizenship. Those stories plus Samson Omalley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. For Ivory Coast, October 31st presidential election began yesterday, Thursday, and will conclude on the 29th. However, opposition parties say they will make sure the election does not take place because they say President Alassane Ouattara's third-term run violates the Constitution. Ivory Coast presidents are supposed to serve for two terms, but President Ouattara says his second term was really his first because of changes to the 2016 Constitution. The Independent Electoral Commission on Thursday appealed to all candidates to be civil, disciplined, and nonviolent during the campaign period. Jean-Gervais Tchéide is the vice president for finance of former President Laurent Gbagbo's party. He says the opposition plans to use civil disobedience to disrupt the campaign process.
The opposition is at the same stand. We are not concerned by this campaign because for the opposition, there will be no election. So we are not concerned with any actions concerning the campaign. More, we have just issued a statement, but tomorrow we will have a press conference to go deeper in the detail. What we have just said is that we are calling our members and the population to oppose any action which will be undertaken by the government concerning the election. We must impeach this ballot. This is the decision we have made. Mr. Bédié has just talked to the press 2 hours ago. So we are not concerned with this election. We are not going on campaign. We are going to prevent this election from taking place.
When you say that you are boycotting the election, what exactly does that mean? You're staying out of it. What would that do?
Well, we are staying out of it, but at the same time, we will intervene in the different places so that there will be no election at all before and during the day, if we reach that day. But we know that we will not reach that day. We do everything we can so that the election will not take place. This is what we have decided as opposition.
I saw an incident where I think the opposition is calling on ECOWAS or some members there to tell President Ouattara not to run or to stand down. But there was an ECOWAS delegation in Cote d'Ivoire. In fact, they decided they will be sending observers.
Yeah, that is what they said before. But we are telling them that they should not encourage the violation of a constitution. And the people of Cote d'Ivoire will never allow Mr. Ouattara to violate our constitution and will by all means prevent him from doing so. Now, it is up to the ECOWAS members to appreciate and to do what is better for Cote d'Ivoire and also for the region.
Jean-Gervais Tchéide is the vice president for finance of former Ivory Coast president Laurent Gbagbo's party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abidjan. The people of Guinea are voting this Sunday, October 18, in presidential election in which 82-year-old incumbent Alpha Condé is running for a third term, which the opposition says violates the constitution. Conde's main challenger is 68-year-old Selu Dalein Diallo, who lost to Conde in the 2010 and 2015 elections. In another development, opposition leader and former Prime Minister Sidya Touré of the Republican Forces Party says police prevented him from leaving the country on Wednesday this week at Conakry International Airport and took away his travel documents. All attempts to get a response from the Guinean authorities were not successful.
It's just a political decision because I sent my protocol to have a registration to an airline company. When I want to go just to take my plane, a lady who was in charge of this question at the airport told me, but one of the major police officers of the airport tell him, but I cannot leave today. I say, who is the one? He said, Mr. Conde. So why he is downstairs? So we went there and we find, but his office is closed. And I say, give him his phone number. No, nobody can say so. So the problem is take all my IDs, my passport, and he just, you know, run away.
I'm assuming it's the immigration or the police. Did they tell you why they stopped you? Did they give any explanation?
The guy who was supposed to do so is the police officer who took the papers. He didn't meet me. He didn't wait here to see me and tell me something. When I came, I didn't meet. He was not at the airport anymore. So this morning, I say my lawyer yesterday sent a paper to the attorney to ask him why. And nobody can give him an answer. Myself, I spoke to the attorney. And I said, why you impeach me to leave? I said, it's a period of election. I said, I'm not running, you know. And I tell to my parties, you know, nobody is going to vote. So why? They say it was an instruction coming from upstairs, you know. It's just political things.
The election in Guinea is this Sunday, October 18. What is your assessment in terms of how the campaign is going?
So it's absolutely very violent. But it's violent because Alpha wants so. What make it confused, so what can allow him to give the result he wants? How you can say that one part of the Guinea, 40% of the territory, nobody can come there and campaign? Today is the day for the opposition to come in town. He's putting trucks everywhere to occupy the road. And, you know, he's absolutely anywhere he went, he wants to organize confusion. He need confusion to have a result he need to. If there was a real election here, Alpha can beat nobody. I thought so. This is why we are continuing our struggle to say election, but without Alpha. So it will be violent because this is he wants. And he start in Guinea, in Kankan, they destroy all the stores, houses, and all the opposition cannot vote in Kankan anymore.
Sidya Touré is the leader of the opposition Republican Forces Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. The Zanzibar Electoral Commission on Thursday suspended the campaign of Malim Seif Sharif Hamad, presidential candidate for the ACT Wazalendo Party, for 5 days, effective today, Friday, for alleged violation of election ethics. Zanzibar is a semi-autonomous part of mainland Tanzania. Sharif Hamad is the second presidential candidate in the October 28 election to be suspended by the Electoral Commission. Ismail Jossa is a member of the ACT Wazalendo campaign team. He says the suspension is part of a government strategy to rig the October 28 election.
Well, it's part of the sabotage done by the authorities, assisted by the Electoral Commission, the police, the intelligence, and every state organ in Tanzania who are trying to salvage CCM, which is beyond salvation anyway. So they did that before in mainland Tanzania when they suspended Tundu Lissu for 7 days. I think after it was successful there, they wanted to do the same for Zanzibar. The reason they gave is that our candidate, Maalim Seif Sharif Hamad, has been mobilizing people to go and vote on the 27th of October, which is the day they've allocated for specific groups of people, which we know actually it is all aimed at rigging this election. And therefore, we've been mobilizing our people to ensure that they go to vote on the 27th and on the 28th. And we don't want to leave it to them to dominate the 2 days. So we said, if people are going to vote on the 27th, it should be for all Zanzibaris. And if it is 28th, it should be for Zanzibaris. You cannot segregate people in groups when it comes to voting.
Mr. Save Sharif Hamen, why did he not honor the invitation from the Elections Commission?
Because he had a rally today. One of the campaign rallies that has been approved by ZEC itself was today, and it was in the northern of Unguja. And we wrote formally because we only got the notice yesterday, which was not a working day anyway, that he should report today. So he said to them, actually, that he can appear tomorrow, which is like a day that he has no rallies.
The Ethics Commission, or the Election Commission, said that he was summoned because he was accused by Chamacha Democracia Makini. What exactly is that?
You know, CCM has never won any election in Zanzibar, and every 5 years they've been coming up with a new ploy to try to ensure that CCM remains in power against popular will. If you all remember, in 2015, they nullified the election when Mr. Hamad had won that election squarely. So this time, what they've come up with is this idea of like having 2 days of voting, one allocated specifically for special security forces, and now they want even to include members of the civil service and CCM members as well. And on 28th for the remaining groups. But we have credible information, actually. What they are planning is to ensure that they stuff the ballot boxes on 27th, and because no polling agents from the political parties will be allowed to guard the ballot boxes for the whole night after voting, so that they can use the same to stuff the ballots on the 28th and claim that these are all votes that were casted on 27th.
Mr. Sharif Hammond is now the second opposition candidate to be suspended. What does this mean for your campaign with the election just about 2 weeks from now?
I think it is all aimed at trying to curtail the opposition because CCM has been failing in their rallies. No people have been turning up. Magufuli on the mainland has been canceling his election rallies and has been like rescheduling because he fears to go and face the people. People are not ready to go and attend their rallies. And the things are even worse in Zanzibar. And therefore, they believe actually the only way to try to curtail the opposition rallies, which are being attended by thousands of supporters, is to make sure that the opposition also does not campaign.
Ishmael Jossa is a member of the ACT Wazalendo Party campaign team. He was speaking with us from Zanzibar City. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Abate in Washington. Today is Friday, October 16. The Secretary General of the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies says Sudan's fragile political stability could be at risk if the desperate needs of hundreds of thousands of flood victims are not urgently addressed. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Severe floods have affected nearly 900,000 Sudanese people, reportedly killing more than 120, rendering thousands of families homeless and destroying farmlands and livelihoods. Jagan Chapagan is the Secretary General of the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, and he has just returned from a four-day assessment mission to Sudan. He says the impact of the worst floods in three decades is far beyond anything he had expected.
I visited an area called Algamayer on the outskirts of Khartoum. Homes, infrastructure, and crops have been destroyed. The conditions are simply appalling. It is boiling hot, more than 40 degrees, and there is no shade. The camp we visited is surrounded by stagnant water and mosquitoes are rife.
Chapagan says the only access to clean water or sanitary toilets is at the neighboring school, which is closed at night. He says people also lack sufficient shelter, toilets, and mosquito nets, which means malaria is rampant and the risk of cholera and other diseases is high. He says children comprise about half of the flood victims and are particularly vulnerable. This humanitarian crisis, he says, also is taking a heavy toll on pregnant and lactating women, the elderly, and disabled. He tells VOA he's very concerned by the level of anger and frustration he encountered and its potential impact on the country's stability.
There was a locust infestation in the beginning of the year. There has been, of course, impact of the COVID. And, of course, with the political change, the expectation of the populations and the governments are very, very high, actually extremely high, you could see. But I do believe that the pressure on the government could be very significantly increasing in coming months if these desperate needs are not addressed.
Sudan's transitional government, which took office last year after longtime leader Omar al-Bashir was ousted, is struggling to build a stable political system and end political violence in the impoverished country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Doctors and nurses in Zimbabwe are challenging a Ministry of Health rule that they say impedes their ability to leave the country. The ministry said last month that healthcare workers must get official signatures to receive a certificate of good standing, a needed reference to get work abroad. However, a doctors group says it is an attempt to stop a mass exodus after poor treatment during the COVID-19 pandemic. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
After more than 10 years of working in government hospitals, this 36-year-old doctor who did not want to be identified says countless protests have not resulted in a decent salary or better working conditions. He applied to work in England, but for nearly 3 months now, he says he can't go because he's still waiting for a certificate of good standing from the government that foreign employers require. He says, I want to leave this country to work where I can treat people properly with all equipment and medicines. He says he also wants a salary so he can look after his children and his parents who paid his education fees. Senior Hospital Doctors Association of Zimbabwe says its members are frustrated by delays they attribute to the government trying to curtail a brain drain among health workers. Its leader, Dr. Aaron Musara, says the government is misusing the certificate of good standing.
Normally, the certificate of good standing talks about the integrity of a colleague, how the colleague does not have pending cases or issues of discipline involving relationships with patients or with colleagues. So it will now cease to be about that the moment we allow it to be made use of by the government in this manner. It can be abused as a way of handling labor issues rather than being a professional issue.
He says in some cases, doctors just want to go abroad for further education and return to Zimbabwe. Health personnel in Zimbabwe have long protested about poor working conditions, including inadequate personal protective equipment, PPEs, during the COVID-19 pandemic. But the cash-strapped nation has been unable to improve salaries or provide needed supplies. Zimbabwe's Vice President Constantino Chiwenga, who is the country's new health minister, told doctors this week that he would address all their problems.
I promise you that I will do my best in creating the much-needed conducive environment for your work. Your work will not go unnoticed. Do your best, and I will do my part.
Chiwenga did not talk about preventing healthcare workers from leaving the country. Health workers said they would not comment on the issue after Vice President's promise to resolve the doctor's problems. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
The Shona community in Kenya held yet another protest yesterday, Thursday, calling on Parliament to fast-track their petition for Kenyan citizenship. The Shona first arrived in Kenya from Zimbabwe as Christian missionaries in the 1960s. Because they are not recognized as citizens, the Shona are denied essential services enjoyed by Kenyan citizens. Atieno Odhiambo reports from Nairobi.
Members of the Shona community, who say they have been living as outcasts, marched yesterday, Thursday, to Kiambu County government offices, calling on the government to issue them with national identification cards. Speaking during the demonstration, Jennifer Eshumail said that the Shona community is part of Kenyans facing challenges and that the lack of citizenship makes it more difficult to live like other Kenyans. We are appealing to the government to give us identification cards, for we are not recognized as Kenyan citizens. We came with our forefathers and they have since died. We don't know any other home apart from Kenya, and we also depend on Kenya as it is our country. Our plea to the government is to issue us with identification cards because we are Kenyan citizens. In Kenya, one can become a citizen by birth. However, this aspect does not favor the Shona, who settled in some parts of central Kenya. Another member of the community, Oliver Muregerera, says not having citizenship makes it difficult to do business because they do not have the proper documentation required to get a permit. As a result, he says most Shona people are forced to do odd jobs for survival.
All these people you see here are highly dependent on employment and other businesses, but you can't conduct any businesses without an identification card. We've really had a hard time in the past where we've been jailed. Some of our women even gave birth in jails. And also, it has not been easy for our children to get quality education.
Kiambu County Governor James Nyoro said it was high time for the Shona to be recognized as Kenyan citizens.
Mimi nataka kuhakikishia kuwa wakati nitaongea na rais.
When I talk to the president, I must tell him about your plight. I will tell him that an urgent file awaits his attention, but he needs to grant the Shona community identification card so that they can live like other Kenyans, as it happened in the Makonde. So I will do my part, and when I am done, it will not be a matter of if, but when the Shona will be given an identification card.
The Kiambu County Assembly approved motion to issue Kenyan birth certificates and identification cards to members of the Shona community. If the Kenya National Assembly and the Senate approve the measure, the Shona could become the 45th tribe in Kenya after the recognition of the Makonde and Asian communities. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA Daybreak Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with former London Marathon winner Kenya's Daniel Wanjiru, who has been hit with a four-year ban by the Athletics Integrity Unit following an athlete biological passport violation. The World Athletics body collected 16 APB blood samples from Daniel Wanjiru between the 20th of April 2017 after he won at the London Marathon to the 25th of April 2019. However, the violation case was centered around one sample, which was taken from Wanjiru on March 9th last year. Daniel Wanjiru is one of 66 Kenyan runners listed as serving suspensions by the AIU. Other notable names include former world marathon record holder Wilson Kipsang and three-time 1500 meters gold medalist Asbel Kiprok. Staying with athletics news, Juliet Chikwel is set to captain Uganda's women's team at the World Half Marathon Championship this weekend in Poland. The 2018 Cardiff Commonwealth Half Marathon Champion is upbeat about her chances and has singled out Dutch middle and long distance runner Sifan Hassan, who she thinks will be her toughest opponent.
In Cardiff, it was only the Commonwealth, so this is the whole world. Six or maybe three or four per country. So it's going to be very competitive. It's going to be Hassan Sifan, because she made a world record in 1 hour just 3 weeks or 4 weeks ago. It's going to be a challenge to me, because I know that experience as well.
Doreng Chisang, Doreng Chimtai, and Rachel Zena Chibet will also be competing for Uganda. Benjamin Injia, head coach of the Uganda national athletics team, said with the preparation of the athletes so far, they are confident of picking up a couple of medals at the World Half Marathon this weekend.
With the preparations that we have had with the team, I expect our team to do the best. But I believe in our team and I trust in them. Team as well for the ladies. Julia Chekwel was our Commonwealth champion. Then the three ladies as well have been good in training. All of them have almost the equal strength. So I expect a podium finish.
The South African National Squash Championships finale got underway on Thursday. The finale will feature seasoned professionals and some of the country's best young players. Eight women and eight men are contesting the showcase section of the event on the old glass court at the Brooklyn Mall in Pretoria. Defending men champion JP Brits says he's glad to be back on court after the long delay as a result of a coronavirus outbreak.
After
after having such a long time off, we have a date where we can step on court and compete. That's something we can't wait to do. For me, national championships is like the flagship event for the year, and to be able to compete into, and I look forward to defend my title, so looking forward.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, October 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.